Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by AOL Radio at AOL.com/podcasting. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 120 for October 5th, 2007. The Unbearable Lightness of Google. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Audible.com. For your free audiobook, visit audible.com/twit. And by listeners like you. Thanks for your donations. This is TWiT. Words of wisdom for Veronica Belmart. I think we should get started. Did I just call you Veronica Belmart?
You did, and you're not the only one who's done that recently, which is kind of weird.
I like that.
It sounds like a supermarket.
How many of you, show of hands, were at Walmart this weekend to get your $99 HD DVD player? Not I. Anyway, let's say that's Veronica Belmont. Mahalo to Veronica.
Hello.
She is debuting this week her long-awaited video project for Mahalo.
Yep, tomorrow.
I think some people thought that you just decided not to do it.
Well, who knew? But it takes a little while longer than I expected to get a show off the air when there's no background in video whatsoever at the company that you're going to.
That's why I do audio.
So you kind of have to build that up.
Build it from scratch.
Mm-hmm.
That's also Roger Chang, who knows all about that. He built it for scratch at DL.TV. He and Robert Herron host the show.
Patrick and Jim started that off.
Patrick and who? Who are they? I don't know them. Should I know
them?
Well,
I don't want to take credit for something I didn't do.
Actually, Patrick said he might join us.
Oh, cool.
Have you seen
the new addition to
Seamus?
His family?
No, have you?
Yes.
How is Seamus? Is he pretty?
Looks like every other newborn infant I've ever come across.
Looks like slightly. Winston Churchill?
Yeah, kind of. Without the laughter.
Aha, he was a funny man. No, Patrick said if he could, he would join us. And I said, look, no pressure, dude, because you probably haven't slept in 12 days, but you're welcome to join us. So he may join us. There is somebody with a baby on the line, however.
Yay.
Mr. Robert Scoble, the Scobalizer, is here. Hey, Robert.
Hey, how are you doing?
Congratulations.
Thank you.
How old is your baby now?
6 weeks.
6 weeks old. And what's his name?
Milan, like the Italian city.
Oh, that's a pretty name. Was that your name?
No,
Miriam
likes Milan Kundera. She's an English major, and that's her favorite author.
Oh, the unbearable lightness of being Scoble.
Yeah.
Wow.
Plus, I was supposed to take her to Italy, and I never did. So.
This is close. I gave you a baby. What do you want? Spoken like a true man. Speaking of true men, Mr. Ryan Block is here, editor-in-chief at Engadget.
Hello. I don't think I've ever been described as a true man.
Are you offended?
No, I'm actually very proud right now. I'm about to get on a horse and smoke a Marlboro or something.
We're not going to talk too much about Leopard, but you did a good job on Leopard coverage on Engadget. You still happy with Leopard?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's not without its problems, but...
I'm starting to see little niggly things here and there that just kind of making me... I don't like it.
Yeah, well, nothing's ever perfect. You know, there's that phrase, software is never made perfect, it's abandoned.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, Leopard is not without its problems, but
no,
it's
but
definitely
I love it. I love
Apple's
it.
Strongest.
Yeah, no,
today.
I love it. I think it's really good, but there's just weird little like, airport issues and stuff that just come up, and it just... It's like, come on, what's going on here?
Did you do a clean install, or did you do an upgrade?
Archive and install. Should I have done an clean install?
I actually did an upgrade, and I had a few issues like Firefox not running at all. Yeah. It would just sit there. And then I basically cloned my entire drive to an external drive. I did a clean install, and then had Leopard pull back all my personal and application data.
That's a bad
idea.
And then
everything works fine now.
Yeah. I should probably
I did an upgrade just because, you know, when I'm doing this thing, I kind of have to put myself in the position of the readership and what they're most likely to be doing. And so, you know, it was upgrade for me and not archive and install or fresh install or anything like that. And I had almost no problems. I mean, you know, a couple of small things with some software and compatibilities that have more or less been fixed at this point. But
Apple told me that I should do it, that, you know, upgrade was okay. And so I also tried to figure, well, most people are going to do what Apple says. And yeah, it's surprising, better than it should have. I mean,
it worked. The upgrade worked well. It was just a few software applications that hung and then didn't want to run. And so I did a clean install. All those issues went away.
Okay, enough leopard talk. This isn't the leopard show because there's bigger fish to fry this week. Some really big fish to fry, starting with Google sticking it in Facebook's face, saying, we've got an API. Facebook says, what? API? What? You were at the announcement, weren't you, Robert?
Yes, I was. They announced that they were joining forces with MySpace and 17 other partners. And let
LinkedIn.
Developers build Facebook-like apps, but build them for all 17 services all at one time.
Yeah, so this is open social. Let's make it clear this is not, Orkut, which is Google's little used, off-forgotten social
Except
network.
Except in Brazil
it's
and
used
India,
in Brazil.
By the way.
Yeah,
right,
which is
right.
Weird. But everywhere else, because that's because Orkut in Brazil means you're going to get it. I almost said the bad word, but anyway. So it's really more about an API, about an API than about Google saying, I'm going to do Facebook.
Right. Well, they clearly are planning something like that, with Orkut. Orkut's one of the 17 services that's going to support these widgets, basically. I call it the open widget platform, right? Because I can build a widget, which, by the way, the APIs are loosely based on iGoogle. So if something runs in iGoogle, you tweak it a little bit and you put it into the open social platform, and then it'll run on all 17.
You have to be a JavaScript programmer? What?
Yeah, it's JavaScript and HTML and the usual stuff, nothing non-standard.
Is this Brad Fitzpatrick's work? Or?
Yeah, he's on the team, and Joe Kraus and my old boss Vic Condotro was doing the press stuff.
So, how does Joe Kraus feel about aliens these days?
I don't know. I don't talk
he's,
to him.
He's kind of backed off on that, or he was
we
at Excite.
We never talk about that. We just talk about tech.
For people who don't know, he was at Excite and then left Excite and was big on like aliens being around or something. And it was just a little weird. And he didn't work for a while.
Like aliens as an ET.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he was. I think that's him. I hope I'm not slandering him.
I remember something like that, but I don't know enough about
Google,
that part of it.
Better Google him.
To be authoritative.
Anyway, so he's doing, and of course, Fitzpatrick's a guy who did Live Journal.
Yeah,
was swallowed by Blogger, and then Blogger was swallowed by Google. So he's the little fish in the big belly.
Yeah, Six Apart is one of the 17 companies. Now the problem is this stuff is not completely built out yet, right? Some companies ship some services on Friday, like Ning and Plaxo, but MySpace wouldn't even tell me a launch date for their services. So, and they said probably a couple months.
Do you think is it in their interest? Because doesn't this really make it your data portable so you could go from MySpace to any other?
Well, that's the next part of this, announcement. The first part was getting the applications working on all these things. That's what really they showed off on Thursday was apps running. Because Facebook's apps are really cool because I can see what apps you have loaded on your profile. That's the first time I've had a software platform like that where I could see what you have loaded.
If you're my friend and I let you see it.
Yeah, I can't see what apps you have loaded on your Macintosh, right. But I can see what apps you have loaded on your Facebook profile. And that's one reason it got popular. In fact, iLike, which is one of the companies that also jumped over and is supporting the open social thing, got 6 million users or 5-something million users in 2 weeks when Facebook first opened up.
Right.
Because
right.
Everybody could see what apps were loaded on their friends' profiles.
But iLike's about music, so really what you cared about was sharing music with your friends.
Yeah.
But the fact that they could, you think it's the fact that they could tell that you were using iLike that made them want to use iLike?
Yes, because I could see what apps you have loaded, and like I like what Ryan does, so Ryan's a cool guy. He has a bunch of cool apps. I'm going to steal all his apps and put them on my profile.
So I'm still,
oh, gee, thanks.
I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around what Google is proposing.
The first part of this is really an open widget platform where a developer can build one of those Facebook-style applications
and have it run on 17 different containers and more containers coming. Containers being MySpace.
Ah, so if I'm an application, a Facebook application developer, I may say, oh, forget Facebook. That's only Facebook. I can write one application that's going to run on all these other guys.
That's what Google's hoping for. In reality, most of the developers I've interviewed over the weekend said, well, we're going to build them twice. Once for Facebook and once for open social.
And Facebook has been kind of funny about this. They said... they didn't show up, and yet somebody at Facebook said, "Well, we want to be a part of it." They're
open to it.
They are. What do you know about this?
Well, they say they're open to it. I mean, there's no knowing if they got into it, how well or much they would, how much muscle they would put behind it.
Isn't it risky for somebody like MySpace and Facebook? Because they're essentially saying you don't need to stay with Facebook.
Well, that's the thing. I don't know if any of this is going to make people move to the various social networks or not. I mean, the reason that people join Facebook isn't specifically because of the apps. The apps are a cool benefit that they have from using that network. But having apps on, say, Orkut isn't going to make me switch from Facebook or make me use Facebook any less.
But your data will be portable down the road. So if...
Well, that's the next part of it, that we're still not clear. This thing hasn't been specified.
What's their intention?
Well. Right, that's their intention, to let you move your data, your actual
Orkut,
from Orkut over to MySpace or to Facebook, and move your data around. We haven't yet seen that system be built out, so we don't really know how well it'll work. The first part of this, though, is the apps, and the apps will move, and the apps are fairly easy to move because they're, like iLike is really its own web service anyways. It can live independently of Facebook.
In a way, this reminds me a little bit of XFN, which was the XHTML Friends Network, and WordPress has been most vocal in its support. But the idea was kind of the whole internet should be your social network. And if with the proper infrastructure, it doesn't matter if you're on Facebook or MySpace.
You'll be able to see everyone.
Yeah. Yep. Is that, you think, the end game here?
That's what they're hinting at. Again, we haven't seen it built out, and we haven't seen the specs. So
why
the developers,
does Google want to do this? What's the?
Well, to keep the big companies argue over developers, and if developers are moving on to somebody else's platform, and they definitely are with Facebook, every single startup I interview now says, "Oh yeah, we're building a Facebook app."
Right. Well, why not? Mm-hmm. Why not? I mean,
and so Google's sitting there going, "Man, we're seeing this trend of all these developers moving off of the web and onto Facebook and building things for Facebook. We gotta worry about that, right? Because Google ain't gonna get paid if everybody moves into Facebook."
Right.
So it's a total play over developers. This was aimed at developers to get them to build the apps for both Facebook and Open Social, because there's some really cool stuff like Scrapple. I disagree with Verona. I think some people will join Facebook for some of the apps like Scrabulous.
I love Scrabulous.
Yeah, if you see people playing Scrabulous, that might actually drag you into Facebook, even though you really don't care about the rest of the stuff in Facebook.
And it depends on how you look at social networking. Do you look at it? If you already have a good set of people in the non-digital world that you frequently meet up with, yeah, that could be the case. But I mean, if you're younger and you're say in a smaller town, you meet a lot of the people that about online, that may or may not be a hook. I mean, if you have a social networking group that skews to one particular kind of group of people, be it like teenagers or goths or whatever, you're more likely to, or some sort of like anime, if you're an anime, you go into an anime group, you're not going to suddenly go over to the Wall Street Manager's social networking site because there's a really cool app on it.
Well, I think the grouping of apps will drag more people onto specific ones. Facebook today has, 50 million people, and MySpace has more than 100 million people on it. And that means there's more people who aren't on those two services than are. And so how are you going to get dragged into one of those networks? It's going to be cool stuff to do on those networks. And, the social networks is a big part of that. But
how are you even going to know about the apps until you're on the network?
It's about people.
I heard millions of people reading Gadget, right? So if there's a cool Gadget app on there,
you don't go for apps. You go because your friends are there.
Yeah.
Not because the apps are there.
Well, yeah, but your friends are going to tell you, hey, join our Scandalous game or join our XYZ thing. Or
but if you could play if you could play the same widgets on any platform, then it becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, right. And then there's no point in moving.
Right, if they're already developing the apps for Facebook and then suddenly similar apps start showing up on MySpace or Orkut or whatever, you're not going to just switch. It's the same stuff going on. Your friends can play
And now
no
you understand
what.
Why Google did this, because they wanted to make sure that people didn't have a reason to switch from MySpace or from Orkut into
It's at least a level playing field.
Right.
Yeah.
According to Eric Eldon, writing in VentureBeat, he says Facebook on Tuesday is going to announce Pandemic, which is going to change. What? What are you laughing at?
Pandemic.
You like the name Pandemic?
Jeez, it's so...
Sounds like a disease.
It is.
Well, yeah, you know,
that is.
That's
yeah,
the whole concept,
is.
Right?
That's what it is.
Virality.
Oh, yeah, it's viral. It's now I don't really understand it, so maybe somebody who's looked at this can explain it. But according to Eric, it's going to remove the sponsored groups that advertisers can buy on the site, and instead will introduce pages that advertisers can buy, and which can include interactive games or other applications of the advertiser's choosing. He says people like iLike and Flickster, which are very popular on Facebook, are embracing open social because they're worried about Pandemic. They don't want to play in this Facebook. I don't understand why. What is? Explain this to me. Does anybody understand this?
Well, part of it is that if you're an app developer and your total business is inside Facebook,
that's scary.
You're having to compete with Facebook, and Facebook might turn off your ability to put ads on the apps. Right.
That's scary.
You know, and that's scary. And Facebook itself has some advantages over a third-party developer. They can stick stuff into my newsfeed where, you know, the problem is with these newer companies. Now, Rocku and Slide were on the first wave of apps, and they got millions of people to sign up.
Right.
But if you started a new Facebook application company today, you know, it's going to be really hard for you to get a lot of people to try out those apps, because I'm looking at Facebook right now, and I have hundreds of apps that people have asked me to try, and I don't have time to try them anymore.
According to Mike Arrington at TechCrunch, they're going to launch a way for a Facebook user to tell their friends what they buy online.
Yep.
Talk about, I mean, there's what you were talking about. Not just come play Scrabble with me, but come fly to Hawaii with me. Or, this song. Or,
you know, Engadget will find that interesting, because now they could create an Engadget group where they could talk about gadgets, right? And have a whole
buy this PDA
talking about. Yep.
Well, it wouldn't be a PDA.
Well, all this that I bought an iPhone, right?
Right.
That's true.
So, but Google's business is advertising.
So it's Facebook's.
I guess it is, isn't it?
Yep.
So is this really, and are we now really seeing the real face-off? It's not about Google, Microsoft. It's about Google, Facebook.
I think so. Facebook, by the way, is hiring a lot of the smartest people at Google. I'm seeing a lot of people who used to work at Google showing up at Facebook.
Because the stock's going to be better? No.
Yeah, the upside is much better.
What is Google at now? Yeah, if you joined Google now, at $711.
Well, Google can easily double, but... Okay, that's doubling. You go over to Facebook and you get a bunch of stock because you're a hot developer, you know, stock options, and you can make millions that way. That's how a lot of these kids got rich at Google. You know, they stole all the best people from Microsoft. That's why they opened an office up in Seattle.
What about security? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Facebook security. I feel fairly good about the Facebook markup language and its security, and I think one of the reasons people trust is because it's such a closed system. You open it up now. In fact, it didn't. According to TechCrunch, Open Social was hacked in 45 minutes.
Yeah, and Facebook has been hacked over the years too. In fact, the director of security over there, Chris Putnam, actually got his job by hacking Facebook.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. And that shows that Facebook has had 3 or 4 years where all the college kids have been banging on it. And it's been hardened over 3 years. Open social hasn't been hardened. It hasn't lived through that 3-year period. So
a guy named the Harmony guy who says, I'm just an amateur, put a bunch of emoticons on John McCray, the VP marketing of Plaxo's profile.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
I think that makes me a little nervous. McCray, by the way, says he added the, I did it. I did it myself. I did it.
Yeah. Well, and then he took it down. So
it was me. I did it.
Yeah, I think he came back later and realized no, it wasn't actually me.
I did it. I actually I like Plaxo, and I think this Plaxo is a kind of company that could really benefit. Late to the party, but if you support Open Social, then your platform kind of is at a peer with everybody else.
Absolutely, and Plaxo lets you share or synchronize your contacts. In fact, that's what I use it for.
Right.
I had 2,000 contacts in Outlook, and I wanted to get them outside of Outlook and put them in other things. And Plaxo
does
really good.
That's what I use it for. I only know 20 people, so my it's not quite as complicated as yours, but that's exactly what I like about it.
Yeah, I just wish I could hook it up to Facebook and shove them all into Facebook, but there's two problems with that. One, Facebook has a cap of 5,000 friends.
Aww.
On Facebook. Yeah,
you're the only guy who knows that, by the way.
Yeah, when did you reach that one?
I reached it in 8 weeks after joining Facebook, believe it or not.
It's because you add everybody.
No,
I don't add anybody.
Yeah, I do add everybody.
You add anybody.
Yeah.
You've got 14.
I add everyone to Facebook too.
He's got 14 fake Borats on his list.
It's a two-way. It's a two-way medium. If people want to follow me, I follow them. That's the gift economy, right? And the second reason...
You don't. Come on. Now, how many people are on Twitter do you follow?
7,000.
Now, you don't leave that open and watch 7,000 people's garbage feeds.
I absolutely do.
Well, what...
He does. You're not on there. You don't see him responding to everyone all day.
In fact, I piss everybody off because I respond to too many people. And other people are going, you're spamming my Twitter. All I see is Scoble. Will you shut up?
at.
Yeah.
So I open the Sunday Times business section right on the front page. The man behind the Google phone, I guess the Google phone must be real, Andy Rubin. He was an Apple guy, went over to Google, and now he's in charge of, what is it? What do they call it? He's the...
Android, Google OS. You know, it's funny because...
Director of mobile platforms, that's what he is.
Right. It's funny the way these news cycles work. I mean, this is no secret. I mean, they acquired Android, which is his post. He did Danger. He was one of the co-founders of Danger who did the Sidekick.
Ah, okay.
And, you know, obviously Danger did its thing. And he left Danger and founded a company called Android. And Android was quietly working on a mobile operating system and, you know, integrated mobile apps. This is something that was known. Google kind of quietly acquired them. I think it was in 2005. So everybody after that pretty much assumed that Google is going to be getting into mobile OS space. And then we've been hearing, you know, rumors about this and confirmation. I mean, you know, I've heard from multiple different really trustworthy inside sources who've actually seen it and know it's coming. And, you know, we've written about Andy Rubin, and it's funny how the Times like does this expose and all of a sudden it's like, oh, huge news. Obviously it's happening. But I mean, anybody who's been paying attention knows this is, there's no news there. I mean, this is all, you know, completely known facts.
I'll just, in my defense, I'll say, you know, I read it. Of course, I read lots of rumors about this, but when the Times publishes it, it does kind of give it some
weight,
credence and weight. I mean, it's not that I don't believe you, Ryan. I totally believe you.
No,
I believe what you're saying, but all of that's insider rumor. And then, I mean, look, if the time, one of the things that happens, I'm sure, is the Times calls Google and says, is it okay if we say this?
Don't well, I mean, you got to remember, when you look closely at the language in the Times, they don't confirm anything more than any of the other publications.
Yeah, but Andy gives him an interview and a profile and pictures at his house.
Yeah, but he doesn't say anything about the Google phone.
Right. So let's talk about the Google phone, what we know and what we don't know. Obviously, there's an operating system based on Android. Is there hardware?
Well, I mean, that's kind of a nebulous question. When you
some
say it's hardware,
it's
going to run on a piece of hardware.
But is Google going to sell hardware? Are they going to do some say HTC, some say this Chinese company is building a set for them. Is Google going to sell a set? Are they going to...
Well, you got to remember, I mean, this can go so many different ways. You know, they could sell their own, you know, Google-branded phone through an ODM like HTC, the same way that Palm used to sell the Trios that were made by HTC. And they can try to sell those to the carriers. They can distribute the OS and let carriers or handset manufacturers kind of do the hardware end of things. Or they can maybe, you know, if they're really crazy, they could just put the code out there, open source the code, and let, you know, anybody who wants to have at it get onto the Google OS.
Yeah,
I mean,
I like
everything
that
I've seen, everything I've heard points to them working with multiple carriers and handset manufacturers. Basically with the goal of dumping the operating system on as many devices as they can possibly do it on, you know, let them decide the interface and let them decide everything they want to put on it, just as long as that it's got that really great Google app integration.
What did they learn from Apple's experience with AT&T?
To not just use one carrier?
I think not to use just one hardware design either. I mean, you know, as cool as the iPhone is, it's not a perfect fit for everyone.
And, far from it, yeah.
So I think
Google knows that the real money here in the future is not going to be in hardware. It's going to be in services.
It's location-based advertising. Isn't that what they care most about?
Well, there's that, but then there's also just, you know, the value out of making sure that they keep the users they have, you know, locked into the Google app ecosystem. They don't want to lose, you know, Google Calendar, Google Mail, Google Search users to other search engines. It's not just about advertising, it's about stickiness, and they want to keep Google in your life, and they want to remain on the top that way, and this is an extremely effective way of doing that.
We'll probably know in about 3 hours. Google's supposed to make an announcement at 11 o'clock Eastern on Monday. Will they announce?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think what they're going to be doing is going to be very shocking to anyone. I think what we may find shocking or most shocking about it is that it may not be super Google branded. You may not even necessarily know that you're going to be running a Google phone.
Right.
Goss, Google OS.
Goss. I like
that. I mean,
that,
and I think that that's like, you know, that's kind of the beauty of what they're doing is that they don't want to get in between the handset makers and, you know, the manufacturers and the
why is Google doing this though?
What they're not just want to keep Google sticky,
but they're not going to sell it. They're going to give it away. You know, Nokia could put it in their phone, not charge, you know, not pay anything to Google. Might not even be branded Google. What does Google get out of that?
Again, I think that they're trying to ensure that the services stay sticky with Google.
So it'll have a lot of Google stuff on it.
There may be a requirement that if you use the Google, you know, if you use Android, mobile OS, whatever you want to call it, you know, you have to bundle it with, you know, Google Calendar, Google Mail, all the regular Google app support. We're going to build that into the operating system. It's going to have great integration. You can customize the interface. You can have it for, you know, free or cheap, cheaper than most other advanced phone operating systems out there. We just want to make sure that we can keep these services on there. I think that's probably the play they're going to be after here.
I think that
it's really, really smart.
But you also think about the demographic data they could cull from that. I mean,
oh, it's so hugely valuable. I mean, if you're walking down the street and the phone says, oh, there's a Pizza Hut next door, I'm going to go. I'm going to take a left.
The thing is, I mean, I don't think a lot of people really kind of get how powerful of a play this is. I mean, when Google is in your pocket, that is so much different than Google being on your desktop.
Right.
And it is effective and sticky and interesting in more ways than we can even really come up with right now.
Well, they may. It may also be
a good foothold there. They're going to be there for a long time.
I mean, you alluded to this. It's also a defensive ploy because people are moving away from PCs. In fact, I just read an article about Japanese buyers who are spending more of their dollars on non-PC devices. If people move away from PCs, they move away from Google on the desktop. But if it's in the phone, you're still the player.
Yeah. I mean, the simple fact is, at the end of the day, you know, people's base core desire for some form of information, be it a map or what's in your calendar or whatever, you know, information is not something that stops at the desktop. And Google's job is to make information accessible to its users and try to make money off of serving up that information.
Robert?
So yeah, not doing a mobile phone OS is just, you know,
they have to.
I think it's out of the question. For
yeah,
them.
They have
I
to.
Talked with one of the executives at Google who runs the maps, APIs and stuff, and they said they're learning a lot from the iPhone and seeing use
about what to do or what not to do.
Well, what to do, they say the iPhone is actually
how people
a
use
lot
Google
more
apps.
Usage of their yeah. services than any other
yeah,
device. So they're
it's
certainly
wrong.
Learning
yeah,
from that, and I watch how Patrick uses it. He's using
your 14-year-old son.
What's that?
Your 14-year-old son.
Yeah,
those who aren't on your Twitter list.
He sits in the back seat of our car, and if we want to go to dinner, he pulls up, you know, Half Moon Bay restaurant and starts looking around. Where do you want to go, Dad?
I mean,
sushi or Mexican food tonight?
I don't know how I survived so long without having Google Maps on a phone. I mean, I just never had a phone that had that capability built in, even in the web sense. And so I don't know how to go back from that. I use it constantly.
But see, that's the thing, and that's probably the reason why the iPhone gets so much Google Map usage is because it's the phone that has Google Maps built in. But what a lot of people don't know is that Google Maps is available for every other mobile platform. It's in Java, it's on Palm, it's on Windows Mobile.
It's on my BlackBerry.
Not mistaken, it's on Symbian as well.
It came on my 8700, you know, a year before Apple even mentioned it.
I think it's interesting because what you're kind of saying is, I think when people talk about, you know, desktops and mobile, I think it's as long as you have that internet web connectivity where you can pull that information that's from the, you know, the cloud in the sky. I mean, a phone is so much more compact and convenient. I mean, that's why it's so popular in Japan, because, you know, if you're constantly mobile, you can, even with a laptop, it's still kind of bulky. But if you can pull out a soap bar sized device and then be able to pull out essentially the same data, that would be awesome.
The other thing that we haven't talked yet is about the new world that's coming into the internet. You know, we're all used to the internet. I've used a computer for 20, 25 years, you know, and most of who are on this phone call have used computers and all sorts of devices. But let's say you're a kid growing up in India. Have you been on a computer? Have you seen a computer? You might not have. And cell phones are going to be what you experience the internet on first. You know, 1 billion people are joining the internet this year on cell phones. And that's dramatic, and I think that's what one reason Google's investing in this so hard, because they know that the future growth of their company is going to come from places that aren't here in the United States or in Japan or Europe, and are going to experience the internet for the first time on a cell phone device.
That's a really interesting point, yeah.
Sounds like as content providers, we should be aware of that as well.
Yeah, totally, because you know, not everyone's going to have the same sort of, you know, screen size or even processing speed. So, you know, how do you divvy up information? Do you make it a set font size? Do you make it, you know, even something as simple as layout. Do you go with the traditional web layout where you got a bunch of, you know.
You know, it's funny. My blog, I have formatted a WAP version and an iPhone version. And the iPhone people complain. They say, but we can see the full thing as a regular Safari page. Why do you do an iPhone page?
That was funny. I did the same thing. I iPhone optimized my blog for iPhone users, and then iPhone users started complaining because they're like, no, we want to see the actual real page. This is how Apple intended it. They want you to see the real web. That's the whole point of having the internet in your pocket. We don't want to see a pared down version.
Yeah, but it's about
bandwidth.
Yeah,
that's what I figured.
I think the conception is that when you do a revised edition for a mobile device, you're basically abridging the data. You're not getting the full set, so they feel that they're being cheated. In the same way people would watch like a widescreen letterboxed movie on a standard definition TV. They feel they're getting cheated out of the resolution. You know, run out and buy an HD TV, and you know you'll get a few more lines on the top and bottom.
I found it really funny. I found it really funny when Apple came out with their web apps page and it wasn't iPhone optimized. And I was thinking, why are they making the iPhone web apps page not iPhone optimized? And I'm realized because their whole platform is to be like, hey, we have the real internet in your pocket.
Right. Now I understand why Google Mail went to IMAP too. I mean, if you're building a phone platform, IMAP is a much better solution.
So happy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Even not just on the iPhone, but on a GooPhone. So if Apple is not on the list of partners tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock, does Apple stock go down and Google stock go up?
Does anyone actually think that Apple is going to be on the list of Google?
I don't think so.
Hardware partners? I mean, Apple does its own thing. It's always done its own thing. And Apple doesn't really pair with other companies for these kinds of things. I mean, the only thing I can even really think of in recent history in terms of mobile pairing and integration was its greatly maligned pseudo partnership with Motorola on the original Rocker. I mean, they actually kind of screwed Motorola on that one.
They abandoned it. They walked away from it.
Well, they walked away from it, but remember, they'd been working on this phone for, I think it was a solid year and a half. And I don't know if it was because Motorola didn't, you know, put in the effort that Apple wanted, or Apple just saw this as a stopgap as it was getting its iPhone strategy together. But remember, they were all set. They'd called all the press out, in I think it was 2005 in San Francisco for the Rocker announcement. We all knew it was the Rocker announcement, and then it was the Rocker announcement briefly, and then it was the iPod Nano show.
Right.
And then they put, you know, the one more thing was the Nano, and
bye-bye
basically,
Rocker.
You know, if you looked at the Apple page that day, the Rocker was like a small link in the corner, and the Nano was.
But they did show the Rocker ad. So
Ed Zander later, was quoted as saying that Apple completely screwed them. They are never doing business with Apple again, and it was just an absolute debacle. I don't think that Google is going to be working with Apple.
Apple sometimes reminds me of a small child that gets sick of their toy very quickly.
Most Apple users are like that, actually. I think that's it's a perfect symbiosis with its audience. And I'm one of them, so I can say that.
You're a sucker.
What? Short attention span.
Juan Carlos Perez, writing in Computer World, says 30 industry heavyweights are on board for tomorrow's announcement, including Intel, Qualcomm, Broadcom, NVIDIA, Sprint, T-Mobile, China Mobile, Telefonica, NTT Docomo, LG, and HTC.
I'm actually kind of NVIDIA.
NVIDIA. Isn't that
NVIDIA is really big in the mobile graphics market. They want to get their chips into phones.
Oh no, I know, but I mean, I'm wondering if they're going to try to. Like they do with on the iPhone, where you have a video player, you know, built in as part of an app. I mean, then have it hardware accelerated by NVIDIA.
I tried to get Kevin Crewell, who works at NVIDIA in the hardware division, on this show. He said, "Well, we don't have anything to talk about in hardware."
So. Oh, please. I mean, when I talk to the AMD guys, AMD/ATI guys, they know that consumer electronics is going to be their big growth area in the future.
I think either Kevin didn't know or...
He's playing it dumb.
He's playing it. Nokia, according to IDG, Nokia, Verizon, and Apple not so far on the list. Surprising not to see Nokia there, frankly.
No, why? Not at all.
Why wouldn't Nokia want to work with
them? They have a huge stake in their own operating
Symbian.
System.
Symbian isn't theirs, is it?
Symbian, and that's where they are. And they run some variant of Symbian or, you know, their own custom code on every phone they make.
I like Symbian, actually.
It's not bad. And, you know, they're doing some interesting things with it. And when Symbian touchscreen comes out, I think it's going to be very interesting to compete with what Apple's got going on the iPhone. But yeah, no, not at all surprising that Microsoft and Nokia are not on the list.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because it's...
basically here.
It's a very eerie parallel to the whole kind of MS-DOS versus, an Apple Amiga, Commodore, Atari, where they all had their own hardware platforms running their own specific OS. And then you had a bunch of clone manufacturers run, you know, basically Microsoft's version of the PC DOS OS, thereby making it a lot more widespread, you know, kind of strength in numbers where they could leverage, we got, you know, several hundred million users versus, you know, a couple of million for the Atari and a few million for the Commodore and maybe 10 or 20 million for Apple. I mean, I think, you know, Microsoft tried to do, or maybe is still trying to do with mobile or a Windows Mobile, where you have, you know, a port, or develop the one OS that works on a multiple hardware vendors' machines.
Maybe we're facing the end of the PC era.
We could. I wouldn't actually cry over it either. I'm kind of sick of the PC as it is.
Do you not need a computer? Can you just do all this on portable devices? And
not yet. I don't think that mobile operating systems are going to eventually overtake the desktop operating system.
I don't want to try to edit a video on a cell phone.
But
you could do it on the web. Wait a minute, though. You can more and more. You're seeing these kinds of applications on the net.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think it's killed that kind of thing.
Yeah. This is like pie in the sky, you know, 30, 40, 50 years down the road when we've all got 40 gigabit wireless connections to our, you know, our WiMAX cell phone carrier. I mean, it's just not, this is not even a conversation we can even really speak realistically about for a
really
long
time. The PC is still the hub then.
It's not going anywhere. Not for a long time.
I don't know. I mean, it's interesting because like, you know, what you list as video editing, I mean, for a lot of people, that's not the prime reason why they have a PC.
Yeah.
You know, one of the biggest growth areas where you saw, people buying PCs is when they started seeing a bunch of URLs for the first time on an advertisement or on a TV show.
Oh, interesting.
It's like, hey, look, what am I, you know, they see this URL that's on the
right.
screen. They say, I'm missing something.
Yeah.
I need to access it. Right. The only way I can do it is with a PC. But if you can start doing that without necessarily buying,
Maybe what we do is very specialized. They'll be specialized PCs. But what most people do is word processing, email, surf the net.
If you could get a machine that's powerful enough to do your word processing, web surfing in a phone, and if you need the full-size keyboard, you can get a little adapter and plug in a USB keyboard and then plug into a monitor. Do you still need a full-size PC? If you can do that just as well. You know what I mean? I think some of it is just because we've grown up with it, so we can't see any other way to do it besides that. I don't know. Maybe I'm just talking about my ass.
No. I mean, I see what you're saying. I think it's a fairly frequent kind of futurist. You know, when is my phone going to use?
I don't think the PC will die, but I think it will eventually become a niche product used by content developers who need the extra power, need the extra.
I think you might be right. I think it might be sooner than you think. The iPhone, is it the invention of the year? Time magazine says so. Others say, but wait, it's not really an invention. It's just a gadget. In fact, I love the article. Lev Grossman writing in the Time magazine pretty much apologizes from the beginning. He says, stop. I mean, don't stop reading this, but stop thinking what you're about to think. Oh, okay, I'll think it for you. The thing is hard to type on. It's too slow. It's too big. It doesn't have instant messaging. It's too expensive. Or no, wait, it's too cheap. It doesn't support my work email. It's locked to AT&T. Steve Jobs secretly hates puppies. And all together now, we're sick of hearing about it. Mainstream Bobby. Media knows. No, I know, because every time I talk about it on the radio show, I get the email. Nobody wants to hear a thing about the iPhone anymore. Sick to death of it. And yet, it is the invention of the year. He does give five good reasons.
It's funny, you know, the perceptions of us who are in the early wave of stuff, you know, but you go into an Apple store and there's lines of people still
looking at it,
them, you know,
they're still mm-hmm. looking at it.
It's like a cult.
But I do hear from everybody.
It's not a cult. You know, my ex-wife bought one and she hates tech. I mean, that's why we're not married anymore.
Well, it's interesting that if you look at his five reasons or his reasons, the top one is the iPhone is pretty.
Yeah. I don't
it's,
like that.
It's followed by it's. You know what I mean?
It's touchy-feely is reason two. And then he says it's not a phone, it's a platform. Well, maybe not. Steve Jobs doesn't think so.
And, come in February.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in February. And it's the ghost of iPhones yet to come, which I'll grant you, but it's just generation one. But that's more of an apology, not a nomination. He says the one thing he says that does really, I think, resonate is it will make other phones better. It is. Mm-hmm. It does set the mark. Set the bar, and you've got to step up.
Yeah, I sit down at the Ritz down here and watch, you know, the tourists come through, and people pet their iPhones. They there's something about
that's
that,
creepy.
It's creepy, but they do pet it. They like and I noticed they use more stuff on it. You know, that more people are using photos on the iPhone than use them on older phones. I mean, I always had the best Nokia phones to give to Patrick. He never picked them up. He never liked them, you know, and yeah. The iPhone. Mm-hmm. But he's
the joke
Apple
amongst my friends. The joke amongst my friends is that they used to never be able to get in contact with me because I wouldn't bring my cell phone with me anywhere. And I mean, I've always had pretty good cell phones, but now I actually carry this thing with me. And if I don't have it, I panic. Yeah. So it definitely resonates with people in a different way than other technology has in the past. I think it's a lot more personal. It's a lot more intimate. But I think, could be biased.
I mean, it's interesting because I think a lot of what the iPhone is doing is what they originally envisioned for the Newton.
It's just a little Newton. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the personal digital assistant. I mean, you've got communications, you have web access, you can type however slowly and awkwardly
into it. Did you notice they got rid of the handwriting recognition?
Yeah, that's right. They didn't try it again.
Well, it's 10 years newer, and it still doesn't do handwriting recognition.
I love watching all those old Newton commercials where they're sending stuff to each other and writing on it. I get a kick out of it.
I actually think that's one of the things that Steve Jobs did right. He took features off this thing and made the feature set that is there work well. I mean, I have a brand new Nokia N95, you know, which does 16 things that the iPhone doesn't, and does video. It has a GPS built into it, does 3G.
But the iPhone doesn't do video? Or are you talking about recording video?
Recording video, right? Yeah. And on, it has a 5-megapixel camera where the iPhone's a 2-megapixel camera, on and on. But nothing on it thrills. Nothing on it makes you feel like, man, this was just done right.
Apple does a really good job of integrating everything, so it feels very seamless. Yeah. It doesn't feel like, you know, it was a new feature and someone tried to screw it on at the last minute.
All I can say is every time I do a podcast and try not to mention the iPhone, somehow everybody
I know, we're going to get yelled at again, just like last time.
Yeah,
I know.
Can't win!
Wait for the hate mail in 5, 4, 3.
Coming up.
There was only two stories this year, iPhone and Facebook.
Yeah, well, I got another Facebook story also from Time Magazine. Coming up in just a bit, what are college kids looking at more than porn? But first, I want to thank audible.com for their support of this podcast. They're back. audible.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. And you know, I know many of you listen to Audible books, so I have a book pick, but if anybody wants to mention an Audible book that they're listening to these days, you know, you guys on Veronica and Tom Merritt have started a new sci-fi book club online.
Sci-fi fantasy, yes.
Laser and unicorn.
Sword and laser.
Sword and laser. Sword and fantasy.
Laser.
Sword and laser. Swordandlaser.com. And
isn't that right. a lightsaber?
And your first book was the Philip Pullman book.
Yes.
Which I love. And by the way, I listened to an Audible. It's a wonderful Audible version of that.
Yeah, I actually know a few people on the site that bought the audiobook on Audible and listened to it that way. And it's been going really well. We're reading The Golden Compass right now. Just the first book, and we're voting on the second one currently as well.
Good. Well, if you want to read The Golden Compass without reading The Golden Compass, that could be your free book. All you got to do is go to audible.com/twit. You get a credit for a free book when you sign up. And The Golden Compass is a pretty good one. His Dark Materials, Book 1. And I think they have all of them. I loved it. I really loved it. It's one of the productions where it's not just a narrator; it's a full cast production.
Oh, cool!
So it's a great way to read this book. Highly recommended. We'll make that our book pick of the week, The Golden Compass. And then once you read it, or actually before you finish it, go over to Sword and Laser and sign up. Because is it free? You just go over there and.
Oh, of course. Yeah, we have a social network on Ning where everyone joins in on this discussion. So all you have to do is sign up for Ning. And we have forums there and lots of topics. And then we have a main blog at swordandlaser.com where we do all the voting for future books.
It's so good. And you found a great template. I love this WordPress template. It's very pretty.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Dark Planet. So that's perfect. And now you're voting for the next book. And so far, Ender's Game is reading. Another great read on Audible, by the way. So
yeah, that one's in the lead right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would actually be a great book.
Good for discussion. But I see also Philip K. Dick. He's coming on strong, and he's always good. Anyway, well, we could talk about books all day, but I do want to remind you to visit audible.com/twit and get your free book. It is a great way to read. It's my favorite way to read. I just talked to a woman who rode across the Atlantic. Talk about crazy. Solo. 3 months. She listened to music. She's going to do the Pacific this summer. And I said, you got to listen to audiobooks. She said, oh, I know. I'm set. I got a bunch of them. That's the way to go. audible.com/twit. We thank them for their support. So, now I got to find this porn story again.
Okay. Hey, Leo?
Yeah.
I got to run because my family friends are here. But
all right. Hey, Robert, it's great to have you.
It's
the
awesome.
Scoble Show, ladies and gentlemen. What's the best place to see that?
Scoble Show.
ScobleShow.com?
Yeah.
And, of course, you can join his fan club on Twitter.
Thank you very much.
You are Scobleizer on Twitter?
Scobleizer, and I do my link blog on Twitter as well, Scoble's link blog. And I'm on Jaiku, or I don't know how to say that, by the way.
Jaiku. Now that they're Pounce. Google, you better learn how to say it. I'm sure they'll be part of the platform.
And on Pounce. And wherever Veronica is, I'm there because I'm
stopping
her.
That's it.
Oh, man.
You and that other guy. ScobleShow.com. Robert, thank you so much. I'm glad you could be on the show. Go socialize.
Thanks. And see you up in Petaluma.
He's doing it in real life. Yeah, say hi to Patrick for me. Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye. He is a real-life socializer. I prefer to stay alone in my little cave here. That's
the little twit cave.
The little twit cave all alone. So among people 18 to 24 years old, the porn is only the fourth thing they do online. Web-based
wow.
email? Yeah. Well, they're probably getting it. That's why. Web-based email. Search engines is number two. You know what number one is? Social networking.
Of course.
They'd rather be on Facebook.
Leo, correct me if I'm wrong. This is what they say they're doing online right
now. Ah, good point. Excellent point. It says Hitwise. Actually, Hitwise is tracking it. So I think this is probably more accurate than actually asking them. This isn't a survey, as I believe. I think this is actually watching the sites visited from EDU domains.
You know, I'm so not surprised. It makes total sense. I'm actually giving a speech at a convention in a couple weeks about social networking, and it's for financial aid people, and they want to know how to get in touch with their contacts and with their students that they're working with. And social networking is the way that they want to do that. So it's really interesting how even people who aren't involved in the social networking landscape understand that people in that age group, that is their main way of communicating with each other. And that's really the main way to get in contact with them if you're trying to talk to them. I mean, even email. I mean, all of us, I think, depend 90% on email for communication. I mean, above phone for me, above IM even for me, it's email. And then I guess, you know, social networking is really coming up there as well. But I don't think of it that way. But, you know, people who are a little bit younger definitely do.
Well, we got a pretty young panel with you and Ryan and Roger. I mean, I'm the old guy. But just out of curiosity, let's start with you, Veronica. What social networks do you spend most time on?
My number one is Facebook now.
And then Twitter?
And then, yeah, Twitter, Facebook, Pounce. And then I'm on MySpace, but I don't really use it at all. I kind of hate it.
Yeah.
And then that's pretty much it.
How
other
do
than,
you
of
deal
course,
with
Dig, Flickr, all those?
Yeah, yeah. Go on and on and on. How do you deal
10,000
with
10,000
others? How do you deal with Pounce versus Twitter?
I use them for different things. I think we've had this discussion before. I mean, Twitter I use as kind of a short burst way of making announcements and talking at people. Pounce I use more as a discussion kind
Me
of
too.
Forum. If I have
yep.
an idea that I want to bounce off people,
yep.
I prefer to use that as a forum style, kind of threaded comments view. I like that aspect a lot better. And if I have, you know, an audio file I want people to hear or a photo I want people to see, and I really like the YouTube embedding feature in Pounce
yeah.
as well.
Yeah. How about you, Ryan? What, are you on a social network?
Yeah, I'm on a few. I don't really use them very often, you know, to be totally honest.
He just got on Facebook.
Yeah, you know, I'd actually, you know, I'm not like unaware of Facebook or anything by any means. I think it's actually the media blitz on Facebook that kept me away from it for so long. I actually only joined up because we did an Engadget reader event in San Francisco, and the reader event or one of the event pages was on Facebook. And so I, you know, got an account just so I could see what was going on there. Yeah, I don't really use, I mean, I don't
you
know
do
if
Twitter
you count
Xbox or Xbox what? Live. There's your
I don't
network.
Know if you count Xbox Live as a social network. I kind of do because, you know, I have friends and contacts on it,
sure.
and I interact with them.
Yeah.
And you can
Xbox
link it
Live.
To your MSN Live account.
Yeah, I don't, though. I don't really use Messenger. But, yeah, I mean, that's probably the network I spend the most time on.
And what game are you playing these days?
I've been playing a lot of Halo 3 lately.
Yeah, it's fun. I like it.
But, you know, I'm a big fan of a lot of different titles. You know, we just got Beautiful Katamari, which is great because you can play it online.
And I know Veronica's rocking to Guitar Hero 3.
You know, we haven't got ours yet.
What?
Yeah, no,
I've been going other places to play. I've been more out of
oh,
the house
go-
than usual.
Oh,
lately,
dear.
I've been going to other people's
oh,
houses.
Oh, she's going to other people's places to play. Uh-oh.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I don't mean to sound like, oh, poor me and lament the whole process, but so not Red Octane is... Yeah, no, Red Octane,
yeah, Red Octane.
Which is the company that does Rock Band. I'm sorry, Guitar Hero,
Hero
and not Rock Band. It gets really confusing because the company that used to do Guitar Hero Harmonix is now at MTV and they're doing Rock Band. Anyway,
yep.
The people who do Guitar Hero were supposed to send out the review units last week, and they've been delaying it, and I keep saying, look, you know, I'll go buy it. That's fine. Just let me know what's up so I know,
right.
You know I don't have
it's in the stores.
Sets
you can
of
get
Guitar
it.
Hero around yeah. here. And they keep putting it off and delaying it at the last minute. So that's why
that's
we don't have a copyright.
Because those little plastic guitars are really useful for Halloween costumes.
Yeah.
I was going to do that as a Halloween costume, actually. I was going to go as one of the girls from Guitar Hero. But
perfect.
I didn't get it together in time.
Oh, that would have been so good.
I know.
Two of the
I
girls
know.
At my daughter's high school were Heart. And they used their Guitar Hero.
Oh, your Heart?
Wow. Where did they pull that out of? Like,
oh, I don't know. It's, you know, teenagers these days, they're big into this old stuff. It's very interesting.
They're yeah. big into the 80s. The 80s has made its way back.
They have. They
but
love
it was
the
big
80s.
When it was big when I was a teenager. It keeps coming back around and around again.
You know, vinyl go-go boots will always have a place in today's high school.
That's 70s.
Oh, no. But the hard boots with the black platform
oh,
vinyl
me.
Boots that go up the thighs. I'm sorry.
Okay, I guess that's a mod thing. That's 60s, right? Not really a disco thing, which would be 70s. All right.
Roger,
wow,
do you use
topic.
A social network in any way?
Yeah, actually, it's MySpace and Facebook are tied at the top.
Now, are Facebook, you using it as a public figure, or do you actually use it with your friends and stuff?
I use Facebook with, you know, friends that I talk to, and then I use MySpace because I like really bizarre stuff. So when I was looking for roller derby teams to go watch, I actually found them on MySpace. So anything that's kind of a little bit, you know, left of center, I tend to use MySpace for.
Have I said how much we missed you on Twit?
Well, what? I mean, seriously, I mean,
what would,
people
what have
talk
we done
about
without that.
People talk a lot about factor. Like how Facebook, LinkedIn, Pounce, and stuff lets you connect with your friends. But sometimes I want to see other stuff that
sure.
I'm not necessarily, you know, a
like
part
roller
of.
Roller derby, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Roller derby's awesome. I mean, I went to a couple of games and it's cool. There's things like you know, comic book clubs versus the obvious, you know, Battlestar Galactica clubs, really kind of nerdy, dorky stuff that you haven't made it into Facebook or Pounce, because those are still, you know, these are my friends. This is just all about my friends and not necessarily.
You know, see, I don't know. I don't agree. I think Facebook is really a huge haven for bizarre groups and clubs. I mean, they've got everything on there. I get invited to the weirdest stuff.
Having been through Facebook looking for really bizarre and weird stuff, you're right. There's stuff there, but it is...
You need weirder friends on Facebook. That's what you need.
Maybe, but I'm just saying, like, in terms, I think it's a lot more diverse.
MySpace attracts the dog crowd, you know, the bounty hunter types. That's who you get.
What do you mean?
You get people with weird sunglasses and strange things in their hair. And
you want to hear something really interesting?
Well, that's creepy.
No, I didn't say
apparently
creepy.
That's creepy.
I didn't say this.
Is kind of weird and creepy, but also helpful. The other night we went out and we left a camera at a restaurant, and the manager actually used my credit card receipt to find my name on MySpace sent me a message telling me that we had left our camera at the restaurant.
Wow.
Isn't that interesting? That's kind of weird, but
it's kind of
thanks.
Creepy.
You know what's really weird is that he looked at you and thought, MySpace.
I guess it was worth a shot. I mean, we are in San Francisco. Who isn't on MySpace?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Wow. I use Facebook. I use Jaiku and a Pounce. I like Facebook a lot, actually.
I think I've given up on Jaiku.
Yeah, everybody gives up on Jaiku. I don't know why.
I feel bad, but I think
it's because they're Finnish.
Because Google
bought him? I don't know.
I mean, it's Yuri, right? He's the guy who
Yuri
runs...
Yuri and Petri.
Yeah, I mean, I met Yuri before, and he was great.
Oh, he's wonderful.
I really thought the service is great, but I don't know. It's just not doing it for me.
Yeah, you're not alone.
What can you do?
I try to talk people into Jaiku, and everybody comes, and then they leave. So it's just me.
It's just you. Just me. You're just not enough of a draw anymore.
I'm the only one
on
Jaiku. That's just me. I'm the only one there. I don't mind. Let's see other stories. Spammers are using striptease to crack CAPTCHAs. I thought that was interesting.
Absolutely brilliant.
Isn't that clever?
It's absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's really no way to get, no way that I've heard of to have a bot solve CAPTCHAs like that, especially picture CAPTCHAs too. And I mean, if they're giving people what they want, which is apparently ladies stripping, they can get a whole, it's like monkeys on typewriters, you know, just all day, just solving CAPTCHAs and giving them the information they need.
So these are those, you know, the weird hard to read text things that you put on blogs to prevent spam. So what they do is when a spammer wants to create an account on Yugle or Gahoo, They will go there, start the sign-up process, get the CAPTCHA, and then interface it to this page, Melissa, and they put it on there, and then some geek sitting there says, oh, she'll take off her shirt if I type this, and he types it, they sign up for the account, and Melissa, I guess, I haven't tried it, takes off her shirt.
Ooh.
Clever, isn't it?
But I heard, like, it's not even a real image, it's like an animated image. Mm-hmm. That's being stripped, so it's not even like,
dude. So, it's on the internet; it's not real anyway.
Well, I'm just saying people are getting turned on by it as drawing versus like a photo.
A drawing versus a photo. Okay, one's 2D, one's 2D.
No. All right. Hey.
Actually, the drawing could be 3D. All right. YouTube and Dig unblocked in China this week. Not sure why. I tell you, if I wanted to suppress a population, I would make sure they couldn't see YouTube.
Mm.
I'd make sure they could see Dig, though. That'd make you hate Western civilization real quick.
Is it censored versions?
What was the rationale behind blocking Dig?
I don't know.
Is it just because Dig represents like a web democracy in news?
Maybe there were a lot of posts about Chinese dissidents, and they just automatically.
I don't know. Well, maybe I only
they also blocked collegehumor.com. That I understand. I wish I could block collegehumor.com.
Yeah.
They still block Google News and Wikipedia.
Well, maybe they're on the right path now. Maybe it's just a matter of time. They're probably working on it.
No, I think they're just doing it because the upcoming Olympics and they need to put on a better face.
Mm-hmm.
Let's allow YouTube.
We'll allow it. We want those YouTube clips of the Olympics to get out.
AOL and CBS have decided to dump their high-def online programming.
AOL, yeah, I'm going to recuse myself from this conversation.
Oh, that's right. You work for AOL.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I'm happy to talk.
In a very indirect way.
I love bagging on AOL. It's one of my hobbies.
And, you know, did you actually deal with AOL in any way?
Well, what do you mean?
I mean, I'm
an AOL employee.
My paycheck comes. It says AOL boss. On the paycheck. Okay.
Yeah. It says AOL on the paycheck. My boss is an AOL, programming VP.
Clone. All right. So you can recuse yourself.
So, no. I'm fine. Let's go. Let's do this thing.
Let's do it, man. Well, I just think you can justify it. HiQ was the service, right? I never saw it. Video.aol.com.
Yeah, I used it a little bit. It worked out all right.
How did it work at a regular, did it suck bandwidth? I mean, it's high def. How does it do that?
When I used it at my parents' place, my dad has a P3 or a P4.
Really? It worked?
But you have to wait for it. Right. I mean,
it's Windows Media Player.
Like I would walk away for a while and then come back to start playing. It wasn't like, I don't believe any on-demand online service actually works like on-demand. There's always going to be some waiting.
You queue it up.
Well, yeah.
But apparently people
weren't
watching.
I don't know. I got a beta invite on Hulu and it works really well and there's no waiting.
You like
it's
Hulu.
Not F, but it looks really good.
Is Hulu Flash? How is Hulu doing it?
Hulu's Flash, yeah.
This is NBC's new platform for showing The Office after you've downloaded
Fox.
It.
It looks really good. I mean, it's much higher resolution than almost any other web video service when you do a full screen, even when you're sitting really close to it. I wrote about this on my personal blog because it's not really gadget kind of material. It looks really good. Surprisingly good.
My problem is I don't want to sit in front of the computer to watch The Office.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And that's one of the things I wrote about is, that there's still this fundamental disconnect that people have where, your computer is for, I hate because I feel like it's such a cliche, lean forward activity. It's engaging, it's interactive. And then you're lean back, you're relaxing, your TV like experience you want to have on the couch with your TV. Right. I think if they do this as a plugin in Windows Media Center or, get a content deal going with Apple, with Apple TV. I mean, devices like that are perfect.
Yeah, but the whole point for this was to get away from Apple and to get away from iTunes.
Well, if they developed a client that worked on the PS3 and or Xbox 360, they would have something. Yeah. Because, I mean,
it's got to be on the TV. It's got to get it on the TV.
I mean,
you could do that if you had an Apple TV. I guess I don't think anybody bought Apple TV. I love my Apple TV, but I just don't think anybody bought one. But if you were buying these things, buying The Office as I was on iTunes and playing on an Apple TV, it was perfect. It was exactly what I wanted.
Right. And now you can get that same experience. You can,
on your computer.
The video quality is roughly, it's not quite as high as what you would download from iTunes, but it's almost there. I mean, I think iTunes is VGA, like 640 by 480. The Hulu is, the Hulu experience, I think, is like 560 or something like that.
So it's PAL.
It looks really good. It's not.
Oh no, I'm not saying it's not. I'm just saying
standard def television. I don't think you're going to notice a difference.
It's funny because on iTunes it's not super high quality either, and I put up with it even on a big screen TV. It's on program material like that, not movies. It's fine. You don't really care.
So here's the hidden content deal that I think Hulu should make that hasn't really been discussed yet is Hulu should get in tight with Sling, who have a forthcoming device that we've been waiting to get our hands on for a really long time called the Sling Catcher. And the Sling Catcher is basically the Apple TV, except it's a little bit more extensible, supposedly.
It's supposed to be out 3 months ago.
Formats, and it's basically a lot better for moving video from, the outside world and from your PC onto your TV instead of just moving video from iTunes onto your TV.
Right.
And I think the Sling Catcher is actually a perfect venue for Hulu to get going with.
It was supposed to be out in the spring, though. What happened to it?
No, it's supposed to be out in the summer. They delayed it to the fall, and I guess now they're probably delaying it to the winter.
Okay.
They announced it at CES, though.
Yeah, no, I remember. $200.
It was pretty sweet. It's still pretty sweet if it comes.
Easy to write something down that looks sweet. It's harder to make it, I guess. But no, that would be the. Apple TV works for me, but I would love something that were more general.
The problem with Apple TV is there's no plug-in architecture there.
Right.
If you want to hack it, but nobody hacks it. So.
Right. No, I have to convert everything to Apple.
And that's the other thing is if there was a set-top box that would allow you to play multiple formats natively without this conversion transcoding process, I think that would help a lot. I mean, think about all the different sites and sources you get your video form.
From. And that's what the goal of the Sling Catcher was. Or I guess I should say is. I mean, it's not out yet, but that's the intention there is that they want to support as much as possible to do that. And there are some devices out there, like the Netgear Entertainer and, a few of them out there that do support a lot of different formats, but I don't think any of them are really good enough to, let's slap a lightweight browser on there with Flash and do, web video stuff. I think that's kind of where this link catcher is supposedly going to be gone.
It's funny. So many of us mocked Hulu when NBC announced it and mocked NBC for moving off of iTunes. But you're not alone, Ryan. A number of people are saying, hey, this isn't that bad. Oh, Malik gave it a rave review a couple of days ago.
I see nothing bad about it. I mean, there are some definite problems if you're used to downloading your video, for one. I mean,
Ohm said, I've never been more wrong. I mean, that's pretty strong.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when we think about these big media companies, I think we just have the expectation that when they're going to roll out a new product like this, it's going to be so ham-handed. And, I mean, you know, they've had such a hard time getting fitting in the digital era in general. I think this one, it kind of proves that these guys can look at it from a different perspective. And I really like it. I do hope that they, you know, do things that they're never going to do, like add DRM-free downloads. But for the time being, in terms of watching premium content on the web, I mean, it's an amazing solution. And
my daughter will watch TV shows on the web. She will watch it and on the network's websites. She was watching Pushing Daisies the other day, and I thought, what? But she says she's fine. She's comfortable doing that. So it may be a generational thing.
I don't mind watching stuff in front of the laptop.
There you go.
It depends on what it is. If it's like a 2-hour epic, I'm definitely going to watch it.
No.
But if it's something 30 minutes or less, I'll watch it in front of the computer.
When does Hulu go public? Do you know?
Me? I don't know. They don't have an invite system or anything either, so don't bother asking.
I got no invites.
I've been getting a lot of people being like, oh my God, you're on Hulu. Can
Ryan
I have an invite?
Ryan says, yeah, well, you can go to Hulu.com and sign up, and they've got a little
form. Right, exactly. I mean, I wish I could invite people, but
someday
they didn't do that.
They'll invite you. You little person.
Yeah,
you.
I don't know why they invited me. I didn't actually sign up.
I don't know why they invited you
list.
For just what you just did.
That's true.
That's exactly why they invited you.
They should have invited me. I like to talk about stuff like that all the time.
They know I'd hate it.
Curses.
They're not going to invite me. A couple more stories. We'll wrap things up. Apple security maybe a little bit less secure these days. Intego reporting a new OS X Trojan horse. You have to agree to download it. You have to agree to install it. You have to give them your password. But once you do, they can steal your passwords. Hey, it's a Trojan horse. Do you think Mac users are as gullible as Windows users, or more so, maybe?
Both.
Less and more. Well, the key is, of course, don't accept it. Don't open it. Don't give it your password. Some complaints about the new firewall system in Leopard. It does sound like it is not as secure as it should be.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of it.
Yeah. That's,
well, first of all,
not even necessarily from this the security standpoint. I just think that it took a really Vista-like approach, and not that that's a bad thing. There are a lot of things that Vista does really well. But the Vista firewall is not one of those things I think that is really necessarily beneficial.
Is it because you can
per application firewall settings is in many cases a bad idea?
Well, and by the way,
it
lets stuff through.
It better.
Well, I don't mind. You know what I said is block everything except what I say. But apparently, even with that setting, it lets stuff through. So it's by the way, whether you like its interface or not, it's not working. So that's a larger issue. The security firm that discovered this issue said Apple is basically the complacent Microsoft of 4 years ago. Might be true.
Are you sleepy?
Me? No. I heard Roger yawning earlier.
Roger's been yawning like crazy. You've been up late working on DL.TV? What's going on here?
I did not yawn once.
You yawned like three times.
Roger, we've been taping this. I've got bad news for you.
Mm-hmm.
Let's replay that tape. So Roger Chang, DLTV is going strong. DL.TV, you and Robert doing a great job with it.
Thank you.
Anything coming up you'd like to plug?
Guess not. Well, we will have a holiday guide coming up, and we actually last week we just had a review for Hellgate London, which, you know, if you're into those, I don't know, it's all right.
Have you played Crysis yet? Anybody played Crysis?
I played the demo. It's pretty sweet, but
everybody's
it feels like
loving
Far
the
Cry.
Demo.
So, and the cool thing is there's a hack supposedly that allows you to get around the whole DX10. You can enable features that are supposedly DX10 only in a DX9 XP box. It's like a script or something that you got to plug in. But if you got enough CPU and video horsepower, it supposedly makes things look 10 times better.
Ah, interesting. Ryan, you played it yet? You're a gamer.
Not so much that kind of a gamer. I'm more of a console
like to
gamer
kill things
these days.
How about you, Veronica? Crysis?
Nope, I haven't played it either.
Oh, there you go. So much for that. Veronica, what? Now tell us, you're on Mahalo. When?
Yes.
Tomorrow?
tomorrow is the premiere of the new show. We had a trailer that went up last week, and it was very well received, so I'm pretty excited about it.
What's it going to be about? Tell us about the show.
Oh, man, all sorts of stuff. Well, a lot of it's based off of how-tos that we have written up on Mahalo, so a lot of fun stuff. And then interviews with interesting people, just about topics of my choosing, kind of stuff that I think is cool that's going on in the world that I want to focus on and let people know about.
So it's right on the front page, mahalo.com. At the bottom, it's Mahalo Daily with Veronica Belmont, or just go to daily.mahalo.com. daily.mahalo.com. Or, as I like to say, Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.com. And when can we see the grilled cheese segment?
That's I don't think that's going up this week. It might go up next week.
Is it going to be daily?
Yes. Oh, it's going to be like the Daily Show, 4 days a week.
Wow.
So it's going to be daily for 4 days.
Exactly. Yes. Monday through Thursday.
We need to come up with a name for that. There's going to be a name for that 4 days a week thing.
Every other day?
Daily?
No, it's not. It's not. It's 4 days a week. It's a long weekend version.
We're going to go up to 5 days a week soon, but we just wanted to get it rolling.
No, don't go 5 days a week.
No, you don't think so?
No, enjoy your weekends.
I like how you think.
Yeah. No, 4 days a week's plenty. Ryan Block is at Engadget, E-N-G-A-D-G-E-T.com. That's the best place to get your gadget news. I don't even read that other site anymore.
What? There are no other
There's
sites.
There's no other site. Did I say that? There's no other site.
No, I appreciate it. It's
great
very,
place.
Very kind coming from
you. Yeah, not just gadgets. I mean, that's where I got my Leopard coverage. Lots of great stuff.
Yeah, if it has anything to do with consumer electronics, we're probably going to be covering it.
And I'm sure there'll be coverage of the big Google announcement. 11 a.m. Eastern.
You can bet your little patootie on it.
Well, I don't choose to bet my patootie
language.
These days, but if I were, I would.
Trying to keep it PG here for you.
By the way, I'll be speaking at Blog World doing the keynote on podcasting. That's coming up in Las Vegas. When is it? This Thursday and Friday, the 8th and 9th. And I'm speaking in my keynote is early in the morning, 8:45 on Friday the 9th. Hope you'll come by and see it. BlogWorldExpo.com. And they're giving away there the Weblog Awards, the 2007 Weblog Awards, and this show is nominated in the podcast category, and I surely would appreciate a vote, because, well, poor John, you know, he never wins anything. Podcast awards are at 2007.weblogawards.org. Click the podcast category, and click This Week in Tech if you would. Thank you. Thank you very much. And Robert Scoble, we mentioned, of course, at the ScobleShow.com. I'm Leo Laporte. We thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Another twit.
This is amazing.
Is in the can.
I should have paid attention. I don't know what I'm going to do. Too much work. The problem is, there's no limit. My server's completely collapsed. So here's the deal. I'm just trying to get the thing up, but I have a hell of a time. What blue screens? Like, forget it. I'm killing you.
Round the horn.
Twit, baby.
Let's go around.